Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Ken Miller. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Miller is a medical oncologist specializing in pain and palliative care, and he serves as the Director of the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Ed Chu is joined by Judy Grasso. Judy is the clinical nurse specialist for the Infusion Center at Yale Cancer Center.
Why don't we start off a little bit by learning your background? How long have you been in this field of oncology nursing?
I've been an oncology nurse since 1980. I started out at Hartford Hospital and worked there for 15 years, then had an opportunity to go to New London and help build a cancer center at Lawrence Memorial Hospital, and then came to Yale. So clearly
you've had a great deal of experience. What made you decide, you know, to get into the field of cancer nursing?
I had been an ICU nurse at Hartford Hospital for about 12 years, and I decided everybody went in and went out very quickly, and I didn't know anything about them, and I wanted to get to know my patients. I had an interest in a lot of the cancer patients that I had seen have these big traumatic surgeries, and I wanted to see what happened to them and be part of the piece to help them get well after they had this initial surgery. So it was just a great interest, and it's in a field where you keep learning all of the time, and I really love that part of oncology.
And so, yeah, you having been in the field now for almost 30 years,
right,
you've probably seen the entire field really grow and evolve with that time.
When I worked at Hartford Hospital, I mean, we would give one drug. I remember we had somebody get off a plane, and they were getting Adriamycin for the first time. It was a woman with metastatic breast cancer, and we got it from the NCI, and we gave her the 50 milligrams of Adriamycin, and she went from being on a stretcher, came in a wheelchair. 2 weeks later was much better, and so it was very exciting. And then after that, everything just really exploded, and keeping up with all the new drugs and the changes has always been just a wonderful, interesting, fascinating thing the more we learn about oncology.
Yeah, I know from our side, I guess the physician side, again, also over this 25, 30-year period, we've just seen such an explosion of the treatment options that we have available now to offer patients. And it really is, I think, you know, tremendous for us and for our patients.
And for me, I worked from 1980 to 1990 when we really didn't have much supportive care. And then when the Zofrans and all the things came out and the Neupogens, things to prevent nausea, vomiting, things to keep patients' white count, those are truly miracle drugs to me as well as the oncology drugs.
Right. Well, maybe we'll hold off on that and we'll talk more maybe in the next segment. So just kind of getting back to, you know your thoughts on what the main roles of the oncology nurse are, you know, vis-a-vis the overall treatment of cancer patients.
I think the nurses really walk side by side with the patients when they're on treatment. They're there to get them through the first treatment. They're frightened. I think everybody always comes in very, you know, wondering what are these drugs going to do with me, and the nurses explain all of that and then administer the drugs, explain everything while they're doing it, and then help patients manage symptoms afterwards.
Yeah, so really, I think you folks on the nursing side really do play the key role in helping to educate, guide, and
absolutely
kind of keep the patients
right.
Right. Grounded, if you will,
right.
Throughout the whole process.
Have a, you know, with a link, the docs are busy. A lot of our docs here, we're fortunate they're doing research and other things, but the nurses are there every day, and they can get phone calls and field things and triage and help patients manage simple symptoms or call the physicians and get some assistance with managing symptoms if they think they need it. So,
now, I'm just curious, have you noticed any difference, say, in terms of the role of the oncology nurse here at the Yale Cancer Center, as opposed to how it was when you were at Hartford Hospital and then New London, Lawrence Memorial Hospital? Are they pretty much the same?
Well, I think the expectations are, well, in some ways, at those smaller places in other settings, you do all types of cancer. You treat lymphoma, you treat breast. Here, we're trying to put the nurses into disease teams and become experts because we said you have huge volumes of patients. And I'm finding here at Yale, the patients are often referred to us after being treated elsewhere, and they're sicker. Plus, we have the phase one and phase two trials open, and that a lot of patients are coming to us after months of treatment or referrals for the phase one trials. And I think that piece is very, very exciting for the nurses to learn about about the clinical trials. Very different. The other institutions just aren't offering the phase one trials. And so that whole process of giving a drug for a first time and not knowing what's going to happen and being the nurse there, assessing and watching that person and helping to divine with the physician what the toxicities of this drug are and how to manage it, I think is very exciting for our nurses here at Yale.
And it's interesting. I was just looking at some of the latest numbers of patients going on to various clinical trials, and you probably would not be surprised to hear that actually more than 50% of the patients we put on clinical trials are in fact going on to these novel, first-in-man phase one clinical trials. So, we're really testing completely new treatments, but really with the hope of having a positive impact on patients' cancers.
Sure, and I know Dr. Schnoll with the ipilimumab trial, you know, he's got a large number of patients because it's one of five sites in the United States, and so people from the whole East Coast are coming to get this drug here. So now I think our nurses are getting very seasoned and experienced at helping to manage symptoms tightly, which is critical for getting these patients through that drug.
Right. And in fact, you had told me that you and your colleagues had put together some abstracts for your Oncology Nursing Society meeting.
Right, and we got accepted. So I went to the Oncology Nursing Society and presented the poster. And it was exciting because melanoma is a disease that there are not a lot of options and treatments for. So people were very interested that there's another drug out there that might really help, you know, and show some benefit to patients.
Right. So. And again, I think discussing our experience here at Yale with all the symptoms and how we might be able to manage really, I think, can be very helpful to others out
Absolutely.
There around the country.
Yeah, we did. It was great. You know, people take your cards, you have a conversation, and so we need to do more of that. It was a good, great experience.
Now, the other thing you just mentioned a little while ago, Judy, was this issue of having kind of a more disease-oriented approach.
Right.
Clearly, I think the whole field has so rapidly evolved that just even within a particular disease, the treatment options have become much more complex. I know in breast cancer, my own field of colorectal cancer, just as on the physician side, it does seem that there's a greater emphasis on the nursing side.
Absolutely.
At cancer centers to focus and specialize.
Right. I think that, you know, when we have someone like Dr. Saif, who's got a lot of patients on trials and a lot of different drugs, it's great to have the same group of nurses taking care of those patients because they learn how to manage those patients. They do a great job with it. And one of the things we did was we looked at, we have, with Erbitux, we have a lot of the, and Avastin, the rashes associated with that. And the nurses did a little project where they, we looked at all the skin products in the area, in the literature, as to what we should be using. And then we looked at what was available in the area and made up a teaching sheet, actually, that tells patients exactly what to buy, what's available in Connecticut, in New Haven, in the areas around it, the CVSs.
Mm-hmm.
And we watch Prescani. We have a symptom management. We're trying to develop the nurses to become symptom management experts in the symptoms they're dealing with. And this was part of one of those projects. And we looked at our Prescani, and we went up 5 points on management of skin in one quarter just from having the nurses do this little project. And they were thrilled because they were actually able to make recommendations, solid recommendations to the patients, to things that they could get and use, and they thought they see it make a difference.
So, Judy, how does that work when patients come back to the clinic once they've started treatment?
Right.
Do the nurses then actually sit down with them and discuss what they've experienced over the past week or 2 weeks?
Patients come in. Everybody gets an initial assessment. In fact, it's a huge requirement of all the Joint Commission and everybody now that there's a full assessment in documentation prior to the patient even beginning the chemotherapy, because we want to make sure that when they start, they're in the best possible shape to start. And the nurses teach. We're working towards we've just starting putting some nurses in the practice so that we can teach new patients before they get treated. We're still teaching the greater majority of them on the first day of treatment. But that said, I think with developing more specific teaching tools as the nurses work in these disease teams and get more experience, we're going to be able to help the patients better. For example, with the rashes now, they get the teaching sheet up front the day they start, so they know to start using moisturizers and what to use right away. It's not when the rash starts, it's before the rash starts. So.
And if a rash should start and, you know, they start on the the treatment guidelines, are the patients told to call
absolutely.
The nurse first, the physician? How does that typically work?
Well, you know, they get a sheet when they initially come in outlining, you know, a fever over 104, 104.4, certain types of things, prolonged nausea, vomiting, to call and ask for the physician. But there's a whole list of things that they can call and ask for the nurses for, and the nurses will triage them. And there's nurses that triage on the practice side and then nurses that triage on the treatment side. Mm-hmm. And patients call, you know, where they're most comfortable. And lots of times they start with their treating nurses, and then the nurses refer back to the physicians.
Now, actually, one question, just kind of going back to the whole issue of oncology nursing, and this might be helpful for the listeners. So do oncology nurses have to go through a specialized training above and beyond what a typical nurse would have to undergo?
Yeah. When anybody coming to work at Yale has to go through the oncology chemotherapy and biotherapy course. It's a specific course from ONS, and I teach it along with Joan Moore and Lisa Barbaretta, the three CNSs. We teach it four times a year, and it gives them a chemo provider card that says that they have a basic knowledge and understanding about chemotherapy. After that, we arrange a clinical preceptorship for the inpatient nurses or for nurses from the MICU and stuff that are doing a little bit of chemo and want to learn. They come to our outpatient clinic areas to learn. And then our nurses go through a prolonged, because they're really going to be doing a lot of management of patients. They're on orientation for 3 to 5 months to ensure that they really can be out there and understand the critical assessment pieces and the critical management pieces for our patients.
And once the nurse has been certified, is there kind of ongoing training to kind of maintain?
We are encouraging everybody to then go, become certified as oncology nurses through the – they're certified as chemo providers, but there's a second certification for oncology nursing. Mm-hmm. And when I came here, I think it was about 3%. We're up to 48% of our nurses now being certified.
Wow.
So we're
That's
running
fabulous.
Classes to teach them how to take – you know, what's on the test and how to prepare for the test. We're really encouraging it. We've tripled our staff, and so there's some of them are there long enough. You have to have 1,000 hours in oncology at least every year to even sit for the test. So once they get that, then we start helping them study to look for that, because we think it's a great way. And we're trying to develop budgets and stuff now so we can send more of the nurses to the conferences, because there's nothing better than going to a conference and seeing what other people are doing and getting some ideas and, you know, bringing them back for your own center.
So I'm just curious. So how many nurses do we presently have in the chemotherapy infusion center here at Yale?
I think about 26 right now.
Uh-huh.
26 or 27. Yeah.
And again, this is just for medical oncology.
Right. Right.
And we also have oncology nurse specialists who are in the other fields of
right.
oncology.
Right. I think in the whole, when we do the, our group, Lisa, Joan, and I also do competencies cluster-wide for the hospital and outpatient, because we're trying to make sure care is equal at both places and the same standards are held at both places. And so I think there's over 95 nurses in the oncology nurses in the institution.
Mm-hmm. Okay, terrific. Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to canceranswers@yale.edu or call 1-888-234-4YCC. At this time, we're going to take a short break for Medical Minute. Please stay tuned to learn more about oncology nursing with my special guest, Judy Grasso from the Yale Cancer Center.
Breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women. About 3,000 women in Connecticut will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and new therapies are providing more options for breast cancer patients, and more women are able to live with breast cancer than ever before. Beginning at age 40, every woman should schedule an annual mammogram, and you should start even sooner if you have a risk factor associated with breast cancer. Screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle are the most important factors in defeating breast cancer. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the Yale Cancer Center, to make new treatments not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration available to patients. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ed Chu, and I'm here in the studio this evening with my special guest, Judy Grasso from the Yale Cancer Center. And this evening's program is really focused on discussing what the role of the oncology nurse is with respect to taking care of cancer patients. Judy, we actually, over the last few months, have actually received quite a number of email inquiries to Yale Cancer Center Answers. And maybe why don't we go ahead and take a couple,
okay.
if that's okay.
Sure.
So this one comes from a woman in Stamford, Connecticut, and she says, my husband is currently receiving chemotherapy, and I'm pregnant with our first child. Is it dangerous for me to be with my husband during this period while he's receiving therapy?
It's not dangerous to be with her husband. The only recommendation it's a conservative one. There's not a lot of evidence to support it, but, you know, we'll tell people to flush the toilet twice for a couple of days after receiving chemotherapy. That's the average time when most of the drugs are cleared from the body within 48 hours. But really, there are no other, you know, safety concerns for him, just to worry about infection. For her, if she's sick, you know, to stay away from him, not to pass anything back and forth like that. But other than that, there's no risk that I know of.
And maybe a sidelight question, and this might be something interesting to our listeners, is cancer contagious
in any way? We get that question a lot, and no. there's no evidence to support that cancer is contagious. But we do get that question a lot, and people worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What symptoms this is actually a caller from Orange, Connecticut. What symptoms should I be aware of and call my doctor to discuss? And this is actually a woman who has colorectal cancer.
Well, certainly if she had any kind of fever, we would tell them to call immediately and to take their temperature in the afternoon. If it's 100.4, that they should call. Someone with colorectal cancer might be at risk for diarrhea. So if they're having, you know, anything, two times more than what their normal is. So if they normally have one or two bowel movements a day and they're up to 2 to 4, they should start letting somebody know that that's going on so we can get them on some medication for that early on. Any extended problems with nausea, they should call us immediately. We don't want anybody home vomiting, even 24 hours afterwards. So if they have any trouble like that, they should call us because we have ways to manage that nowadays. And the other thing you might get with some of the drugs for treating colorectal cancer is some mucositis. So if they have mouth sores, they should let us know about that. So those are the biggest things.
So, but I guess the main take-home message is if any symptoms that just seem out of the ordinary,
call
immediately.
Call. No question is ever stupid. We want to hear about things because we can really help people to feel better and get them better, get them seen by the physician if they need to. So please call early.
All right, because I think one of the things that I've noticed is that sometimes patients feel very reluctant to call, one, because they don't want to bother the staff, but really the key is to call immediately. And so if there is something that we need to do in terms of an intervention, we can get to it immediately.
Right. Even if they're feeling very weak and tired, sometimes they need some hydration. You know, they think they've been drinking, but they really haven't been drinking enough for those 2 days after the chemo. And we bring them in and we give them hydration and they feel 100% better. So it's very simple things sometimes.
Okay. We have a question from Jim in Mystic, Connecticut. Many days I feel depressed. Is this a normal reaction to a cancer diagnosis?
I think it can be a normal reaction to a cancer diagnosis, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing something about it. People should let us know when they're feeling that way. I was just at ONS at a great conference, which was talking about illness syndromes with cancer, fatigue and depression being one of them, and how it's probably a factor of some of the chemistry from the disease and from the treatment going on. So really, patients feeling this way should tell their health care providers, and so we can try to help them out with that and get them on medications to help, or give them some practical ways to manage their fatigue, maybe help them figure out how to get some help at home.
I know one question that I always get relates to actually whether or not, you know, we as the healthcare providers ever kind of either get depressed, down, or burnt out, because obviously, you know, every day we're dealing with cancer patients, issues of death and dying. And I'm just curious, you know, from the oncology nurse perspective, do you see, you know, these issues, and if you do, how do you deal with them?
I think we do. I think some of the nurses, because we're working in these disease teams and they tend to see the same patients over and over again, they get very attached to the patients. And so, yes, when somebody isn't doing well, they do feel it. We're fortunate we have a full-time chaplain in our clinic now who has just started doing monthly where they do remembrances of patients who have died, but he also does support groups for the nurses. And I'm finding this is very helpful for everybody. And I'm finding also having him around around is very helpful to the patients because he's the one person there who says, I have time to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And he's busy all day long. People know that here's one person who has time. And I think he's helped to move a lot of people to deal with a lot of these issues. So we're very fortunate with
him. Great. And are there any other support services that are available to patients?
There are. Well, we have social work services. We have nutrition services. We have care coordination. There are support groups for all the different disease management types. So there's lots of ways that patients and families can find some support.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, early, you were talking about how our ability to treat symptoms has dramatically improved really over this 10 to 20 year period. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about, the nurse's direct involvement in trying to identify and then treat these side effects associated with treatment.
Well, for instance, you may have somebody who maybe had a cisplatin regimen, and when they come back the next time, they didn't call, they didn't complain, they went home and had the antiemetics, but when they come in, she's assessing them and they're saying, oh, I really had a terrible time for 3, 4, or 5 days afterwards. And she'll review what the patient took for medications and call the physician and have a discussion. Physician's probably going to be seeing the patient, so probably both put their heads together and kind of come up with something. And there are innovative things we can do nowadays, like giving Aloxi at the amended Aloxi at the beginning of the treatment, and then on day 5, give them another IV dose of Aloxi, and that will carry them over for those 3 or 4 or 5 days afterwards when they go home. And it's so I think the creativity, and then we have a wonderful pharmacy staff who helps to tell us, will this work? Is this okay? And then with the nursing staff input, we've been able to come up with some innovative strategies.
Again, it is pretty remarkable. I remember even when I was a fellow back at the National Cancer Institute in the mid-1980s, we didn't really have a whole lot of medicines that could help to prevent nausea and vomiting. And in some cases, that was really the big problem. But now it's dramatic in terms of the numbers and types of medicines that really can prevent nausea and vomiting from happening, and then also once it does happen, to try to break that cycle.
And in fact, because we're doing so little nausea and vomiting, the Oncology Nursing Society now says that fatigue is the biggest symptom most patients are complaining about. So that's kind of interesting. And so now there's lots of small work groups through oncology working on fatigue and trying to figure out how to manage that better.
And what are some of the ways that we can, get a patient through this fatigue issue?
I think the fatigue issue can be related to anemia, so we can pay attention to anemia. But a lot of it is, we used to tell everybody to be couch potatoes. Lay down, rest, don't do anything while you're on this. Take care of yourself. Now we know, because we have some good, and I'm blanking on their names right now, but we have several nurse researchers that have proven, mostly a lot of research done with breast cancer women, that exercise is a much better way to go. And a lot of our patients can't. We have to explain the exercise is, walking up and down your driveway until your stamina gets better, taking a walk around the block. They don't have to be marathoners, but just get out and walk. Short periods of activity and short periods of rest seem to work much better for patients.
Yeah, in fact, actually, one of those researchers is Tish Knopf from the School of Nursing, who has focused a great deal of her research efforts on looking at this issue of exercise, physiology, and breast cancer during treatment and after treatment. And I think we also have a number of other folks who really, as you say, do believe that exercise, not necessarily lifting weights or running marathons, but just making sure that they keep active is really important.
When I was at Lawrence Memorial, we had a Susan Komen grant, and we did an exercise group with, and I had a physical therapist with me every Monday night for like 3 years with the breast cancer women, and it was, they all didn't come. Sometimes they were tired after treatment, but they, it was a very positive group. They didn't want to go to a support group and discuss. They wanted to be doing something positive, and they saw the exercise in that way. So I think it can be a positive in their lives that they can still do this as well, and it helps their emotional feelings about what they're going through.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other kind of main symptoms that you as the oncology nurse really want to educate patients about?
I think nowadays, with the types of drugs we have coming out, peripheral neuropathies are huge for patients, because if you have a lot of numbness and tingling in your fingers and toes, and walking is difficult, and you're dropping the carton of milk, those are big issues for our patients. And so I think there's still a lot of work to be done. We don't have clear evidence on what's the best thing to do, but I think we can at least give our patients enough information about the possibility of it happening and how to manage at home to be careful so they don't have any injuries related to that.
And one thing that I've been really kind of intrigued about over the last few years is this whole issue of chemo brain, where patients will say, you know, Dr. Chu, I just feel foggy sometimes, and I can't, my mind isn't all that clear. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, we see that all the time, and we nurses define it for the patients because they'll say, God, I can't read a book anymore. I have to flip through magazines. Women will say they now are channel surfers like their husbands are.
And, well, that's not so bad.
Yeah. And they'll say, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I can't seem to concentrate, and I can't, I get upstairs and I can't remember what I went up there for and all that kind of stuff, and I have to write notes on sticky notes and post them all over the place. So I think it is, and, I don't think we know. I know there's been a lot of work in people looking at it in breast cancer just to see with the effects of decreased estrogen, is that a part of the problem with patients, but then we see men with it too. So I don't really know, but it is a huge factor for a lot of our patients, and especially our patients who are trying to work. They really come back and tell you about it, that they have to work very hard to keep track of things at work.
And have you found any strategies that can kind of help to overcome some of that?
I think getting enough rest, not being tired, prioritizing your activities, and again, having some kind of system to keep track of things really, really helps. We don't have any, easy answers yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Actually, we have a very, I think, good question from Melanie in New Milford, Connecticut. My doctor doesn't always answer my questions so that I can understand really what's going on. How can I get the time I need from him or from any of the other staff to review my disease and my treatments and my progress? And I think that's actually a very, very good question.
Yeah. I think there's a list is a really great thing, because if you come in with a list and you say, that the doctor's busy and maybe he's edging out the door, you say, but I'm only on three on my list. And really, if we can get through the list quickly, I'll have answers to the questions I need. Another thing is to say, I think back to the physician, is I'm hearing you say this. And then the physician will have a very good idea. And I think it's good for physicians to say that to the patients as well. Are you hearing what I'm saying like that? So that people can have a chance to express what they understand about what you just said. And then they'll understand. I know many, many times with teaching patients about chemotherapy, first of all, they don't understand. They understand. They get about 30% of what you're teaching initially. And with the physicians, I find even, they so focus on the disease and treatment, they go into this black hole. And they'll come out to us and say, I don't even remember half of what he said. Mm-hmm. So lots of times, myself as a nurse, I've gone back to the physician and said, what did you just tell this patient? Because she went in this black hole with the first word and she didn't hear anything else. And they've told me, and I've been able to go back and reinforce that and reinforce it again and again and again the first two and three treatments, so they really understand. And then say to them, too, can you tell me now, do you have a better understanding of that? What are your thoughts about this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that really is important, because I have found, even when I think I'm explaining things very slowly and carefully, the patients and their family members really only get a very small fraction of what we're saying.
Yeah.
Because in large part, I guess they're very anxious.
They're anxious, and so many have told me, I heard the word cancer, I heard the word about my prognosis, and I never, ever heard another word. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is for family members is to bring someone with them to the doctor's visits, and at least to the initial part of chemotherapy, where there's a lot of teaching and education going on, so someone else hears and can write down, and they have someone at home they can bounce the information off in case they forget something.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess really, right, the key issue to emphasize is that the physician and the oncology nurse really are a team.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
And really, the two need to work hand in hand, working closely with the patient and the family members.
Yeah. We're lucky we have a nice computer system, and it is used very well by the physician. So I'll go in and read the histories and all the background information, and lots of time read that and then interpret that to the physician isn't there that day. Can always do that and read and interpret and then explain to them but I usually like to know what the physician has explained to them about their options, and I find that conversation is the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then maybe just, we only have a very short time left. Again, to reinforce this notion to the listeners out there, when should a patient or family member call the nursing staff if they're concerned?
Anytime they're concerned, I think. Anytime. We have a very good staffing. We're very fortunate. We've got plenty of nurses. They'll answer your call. They'll answer your question and help triage your call as to where it goes. No question is a stupid question. We're there from 7 in the morning till 6 at night, and we're glad to help.
Great. Well, thanks, Judy, so much for being with me this evening on Yale Cancer Center Answers.
Thank you.
I think it's been great to hear about the role of the oncology nurse, and hopefully we'll have you come back on a future show and get an update. Until next week, this is Dr. Ed Chu from the Yale Cancer Center wishing you a safe and healthy week.
If you have questions, comments, or would like to subscribe to our podcast, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you'll also find transcripts of past broadcasts in written form. Next week, we'll talk about blood transfusions and the role of the American Red Cross. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.